Reporting on the games you love by people who love to game. The MMO Reporter Network.
You, my friend, are listening to the Happy Hearthstone. This show is brought to you by Doghouse Systems, who make some of the best gaming PCs on the planet. If you want all the benefits of building your own computer but have no clue where to start, go ahead and let our friends take care of you. Check them out at doghousesystems.com and use the code MMOREPORTER for a free 128GB solid-state drive upgrade. And by Audible, the best audiobook program in existence. If you have any kind of commute or just wish you read more, I promise you this, Audible is the solution. Go to audibletrial.com/MMOREPORTER to download a free audiobook today. Hello and welcome to episode 89 of the Happy Hearthstone podcast, the longest running Hearthstone podcast in the history of space and time and cards. I'm your host, Andrew Brown, and this week I am joined by somebody who likes to live on the wild side. I'm joined by a good friend, Ben Besler. What's going on, Ben?
Not much. I am just so excited about Wild and, you know, the wildness of Un'Goro, and I'm just so psyched and just excited to be a Hearthstone player at this moment.
Isn't this a good time to like this game?
Yeah.
It's a good time to like this game, good time to play this game, good time to be invested in news of this game. I mean, I feel this way always as we're anticipating a new set releasing, but this one especially, I just feel like they're getting a lot right with this.
Absolutely. And especially with all these different cards that they revealed today, which I know we're going to talk about later, but it's just so neat to see the direction that they're going and these new mechanics that they're playing with, whether they have a keyword or not. Like, it's so exciting to see that they are willing to try and test things that haven't been able to test before, and I'm excited.
It's gonna be good. We do have some new cards to talk about, and like Ben mentioned, we're actually recording this on Friday, so we just had this set release, so I know you've been thinking about these cards for a while, but for us they're very, very fresh, so hopefully the freshness will rub off and have some fun with that. So Ben, but before we get too far into this, why don't you just tell us a little bit about who you are, man, how you got into Hearthstone gaming and what you do now for the community?
Absolutely. So my name is Ben Besler. I've been playing Hearthstone since the beta. I've got the golden Gelban Mechatorp to prove it.
Oh, nice.
I spent money before the game was fully out. but I have been playing Hearthstone since the release. I've been playing video games for a long time. I got into League of Legends and, you know, lost a lot of years of my life to that game from high school on. And I still play it occasionally. But what happened to get me into podcasting and really into Hearthstone was I took a job that allows me to listen to about 40 hours a week of podcasts a week. I work as a janitor, and I'm alone, just totally alone. We're allowed to wear headphones, so I just started listening to podcasts. And I started listening to Hearthaholics, which is the show that used to be run by Brian, Andres, and Billy on the Whales or Whales Network. I loved it. And I sent them a message. I was a huge fan. And I pitched a show idea to them. And they were nice enough to invite me onto the network and allow me to run that show on their network. And after Brian, Andres, and Billy canceled Hearthaholics a long time ago, when they were in the process of canceling it, I was like, well, hey, is there any way that I could help you guys continue to run it? And at that moment, Brian was just like, no, it's way too much work. I don't really want to. And so as of, you know, a couple months ago, I revived Hearthaholics on my own. It took it in a totally new direction, a whole new cast of characters. But I am now running my own little Hearthstone show, and I love the game. And that's kind of what's brought me to where I am now.
That's awesome. And you guys really specialize on the wild format and tavern brawls and stuff like that. What got you so interested in just putting together a show that's all focused on that?
Well, I guess for me, it's the fact that, like, the fun that I have in Hearthstone is not from being competitive. It's not from the whatever number I happen to end at the end of the month. The fun in my Hearthstone comes from playing Anubarak and Lorewalker Cho, and just like doing the crazy things that Hearthstone is able to, and building these decks. And so what I and plus the Tavern Brawl. The Tavern Brawl was a great place for people with my passions to go in and be like, okay,
absolutely,
I want to build a deck and just break the game. and so that's what I did is I realized that I was having fun doing it like that. The most fun conversations I had about Hearthstone were about that. And my favorite parts of listening to all different types of other podcasts were about the crazy combinations that you can do. And so I wanted to try to give other people a place to be able to listen to that and have that conversation. And so I found two other people. It's Leon and Dustin, my co-host. Mm-hmm. And now we sit around and we're Hearthaholics. We sit around and just talk about Hearthstone.
That's awesome. And it's a really fun show. If you haven't, if you listened to it in the past or haven't listened to it at all, man, it's a great one to put in your rotation just because it is so different. I know lots of different shows kind of try to hit on those things, but to be able to really kick back and just have some fun with some friends, I mean, you definitely get that feel listening to you guys. So I really enjoy checking it out and being with you. So, well, thanks so much for hanging out with us here, man. We're going to kick off this show how we always do, happily, just like you said. So, Ben, tell us why you're happy today.
Oh, well, I'm happy. As I mentioned before, I'm happy because of Hearthstone. It's a great time to be playing. Un'Goro is coming and all these crazy fun mechanics. But in my, you know, quote-unquote real life, right, my computer has been dead for like 2.5 weeks now. I built this desktop about 9 months ago, and I took it into a store that I won't name, and just to ask them a question, and they broke the motherboard.
Oh.
And so for 2 weeks, they were repairing it. I didn't have to pay anything because they were the ones who broke it. But it was really sad because my podcasts suffered, my gaming suffered. Like, I got so bored that I pulled out my PS2 and started playing Jak and Daxter. Like, it was rough.
You need something like that to really like force you to go and unearth those old games and stuff.
Oh, absolutely. But I'm happy because my computer is back and I'm back to being able to stream and record for YouTube and do all the podcast stuff. So that's why I'm happy. Andrew, why are you happy?
Well, I'm happy. It's kind of twofold because this week has been a little interesting. My wife is a school counselor, so she had spring break to be off. So she went and took our daughter to Colorado, which is where her family's at. And so it's been bachelor week for me. So I'm hanging out at home with our dog, which for anyone else who's, you know, married in a relationship, you know that it always seems like the grass is always greener. You're like, man, it'll be nice to get a little bit of time, be on my own and stuff. And for me, it took about 1 or 2 days. And I was like, yeah, I want my family back, you know. So,
absolutely.
But I tried to make the best of the time, so, you know, able to give some more attention to our puppy, take her to the dog park, which is always relaxing. And also, I realized this was going to be my real chance to make a push on the ladder. So I hit rank 5 earlier this week, which is the fastest I've gotten there in a while. And really want to make Legend one of these days, but man, that 5-to-1 grind is rough. And
it's brutal, man.
I mean, I've gone up and down from rank 4 to rank 5 a couple times so far, so I'm still going to keep trying, but I don't know. I feel like I need a whole month where my family's not here so I can just do nothing but that. But it is nice to have a little bit more time to just relax, be able to do some projects around the house and stuff like that. So it's been a unique week, if nothing else, you know.
For sure. Yeah, that's awesome that you've gotten to have that time. I know that whenever my wife is gone, that it does not take long of sleeping alone in the bed to be like, hey, I want you back.
I miss you. There's a reason I married you. So
yeah, for sure.
That's good. Well, moving into our news, we were talking right before the show, and I was asking him, I mean, we've obviously got these new cards, which is the biggest thing, but I was like, is there anything else going on? Oh, there was a video they released with that guy from Community.
Right, right.
And he had, like, toothpicks in his face. So there's that. They said that the reward for the Paladin quest is going to be a 5-mana beast, but we don't know anything else about it. Okay.
The whole community is still feeling the effects of Ben Brode's rap.
Yeah, that's actually true. So while the new cards are huge, really other than that, there's not a ton going on. The Hearthstone Championship Tournament is happening March 23rd through 26th. So if you're listening to this before then or during then, you still got a great chance to go and see some professional level Hearthstone players. And I'm sure that it's going to be a lot of fun. They did mention on the stream where they revealed cards that they are going to be revealing more of them during that. So definitely stay close to all of your news sources. Be following us on Twitter and all of that stuff so that you can know all the new cards. And, you know, you mentioned that they said something, Ben, about possibly doing more streams like that. Did you like the format of having a Hearthstone personality with a Hearthstone developer?
Absolutely. I loved that they did that, because as he even said in the video, he's like, I don't know what these cards do. Like, I'm just going to ask the questions.
It
felt so much more connected. Like, it was a lot more personal, as opposed to the developers being like, hey, here's what we want you to think about this card. We were getting a reaction of just a player without the other inside knowledge. And, you know, he's trying to evaluate cards as best as he can without knowing the rest of the set. And it was just, it felt good to have other people in the same boat that we were as viewers.
Sure. And if you haven't seen it yet, it's definitely worth watching. And I totally agree. I think especially having a streamer like Day9, who's really funny and fun to watch.
Yeah.
Seeing those kinds of reactions, but he knows the game also. He's not just an idiot who's on stream. At least in my opinion, he's not. So I thought it was a great balance, too, for all the same reasons. So we've got to talk about just a couple of these cards. We are going to do what we normally do here on the show, which is have a big mega couple episodes once the whole set has been released to talk through every single card. I always enjoyed listening to Josh and him talk about, you know, lots of cards in full. It's like sitting down for Thanksgiving dinner where, you know you can't do it all the time, but you get seconds of green bean casserole and some mashed potatoes and everything, and it's good. And so we're gonna plan on doing that again, but we got to talk about these a little, right, Ben?
Of course. Yeah, I wouldn't be able to get through a podcast without talking about them.
Absolutely. So we've just got a couple here that we're going to talk about. One is, of course, the brand new Warlock Quest. And so they've said it before, and they also mentioned it again on the show. Every class is getting a quest, and so far all we saw before was the Priest Quest. But now we know that the Warlock Quest is going to be called Lakari Sacrifice, and it reads, Quest, discard 6 cards, reward, Nether Portal. So obviously...
So Andrew, what's the Nether Portal?
I'm so glad you asked, Ben, because that's what everyone's asking once they hear this. I mean... You know that Warlock does discard cards. They can do that. 6 cards isn't even really that bad, I don't think. You know, you got some turn 2 cards that can do that. Even 1 cost, and then Doomguard can cycle it up pretty quick. But obviously it's all about, is the Nether Portal worth it or not? Well, the Nether Portal is a 5-mana spell, and it reads, open a permanent portal that summons 3/2 imps. Which, once I read that, kind of necessitates a question... What is that, right?
Yep. exactly.
We're still asking it. So when it says permanent portal, it means permanent portal. So what happens is you get a token on your side of the board that cannot be removed. No matter if your opponent... It can't be targeted by spells or minions or anything like that. If you use any kind of area effect or AoE spells, it will not affect those. So you play a Twisting Nether, which destroys all minions. That portal will stay right there. And that token says, at the end of your turn, summon 2/3/2 imps. So you've got an unending supply of flame imps that aren't actually costing you anything other than a spot on the board. Right. So this is obviously very powerful, but we haven't seen anything like this. So Ben, what was your first reaction when you saw this?
So my first reaction was like, wow, that's crazy. But I was also looking at, so if you're discarding 6 cards, that's a fifth of your deck, right? And so if every turn you're summoning, at the end of your turn you're summoning 6/4 in stats, how many turns is it going to take to make up those cards you discarded? Now if you have things like Silver War Golem in your hand and you're able to get that on board, or Fist of Draxxus or whatever,
sure,
you're definitely going to be in a much better space. But also, like, in terms of like a heavy control meta, like if that's what we're going into, this is going to be, it's going to be very difficult to make this work. But it doesn't make it any less exciting. You play this in Wild with Mel'Ganis, suddenly your 3/2s become 5/4s. Yeah, 5/4s. Yeah. And you get 2 more every single turn. So I think that this could work, but again, we don't know what the meta is going to be like.
Right.
I think this is great for like mid-range, but I don't think it will be able to outlast any other high control deck.
Right, and I keep trying to wrap my mind around how valuable is getting 2/3/2 tokens on the board for your next turn, really.
Right.
Because you can't do anything with them immediately. It's at the end of your turn and all that. Because right now, a discard lock deck is pretty focused on trading value, stuff like that, wanting to kind of be aggressive with that style. And I don't know that you're seeing... Like, I almost equate this card a little bit with Karakazam, which throws the 3-3, 2-2-1-1. Like, it gets a bunch of tokens on board. And that card doesn't see any play because there aren't really any Warlock decks that want to generate a lot of tokens. And I think the fact that these two minions are imps is important, or the fact that they're demons is important, especially right. for Wild with Mal'Ganis. But even with, like, Crystal Weaver right now is seeing a little bit of play. So yeah, stuff that's going to buff your demons are important. But also the fact that this is a never-ending effect. If you're going into Fatigue, your opponent can only deal with so many 3-2 minions, and they're also going to have to... Let's say that you're just able to get this on the board during your turn. Maybe you clear something with a Soulfire, and that, you know, gives you the Nether Portal. You play it, and that's the end of your turn. If your opponent has a Holy Nova in hand... They're not going to want to use it against 2-3-2 imps that are just going to come back the next turn.
Every single turn, yeah.
Exactly. So they're going to wait at least one turn, but maybe even two turns to kind of, you know, give you some space and then really get a lot of value off of that. But you're running into their face with those. So it's really hard for me to evaluate just how power... It's a very unique effect. We haven't seen this ever before, having a permanent thing. But I think it's going to necessitate a little bit different style play. And it could be maybe that mid-range Warlock that I know my good buddy Rob is just dying for. But yeah, it'll be really interesting to see. And like I mentioned, I think the discard six cards isn't too crazy. So this will sort of be, you know, whereas with the Priest minion, we were scratching our heads saying seven Death Rattle minions. Like, do we have that many that we really want to play?
Right,
that seems
right.
really late game, all that kind of stuff. So... It'll be really interesting, and I'm sure each of these quests, if they're as powerful as, you know, they're making it out to be, that people are going to create decks completely around this, and who knows, this might be the most broken card in the game.
Maybe, but we'll just have to wait and see, right?
Absolutely. Well, why don't you talk to us about this other card? I know you're super psyched for this, because Rogue is your class, right?
Yeah, so I basically only play Rogue and Druid, and so I was really excited when they revealed the Rogue Legendary. Now, the chat in Twitch, whenever they revealed it, was immediately, oh, this is worth dust, but let's talk about it and decide for ourselves.
Okay.
Sharazin Corpse Flower is a 4-mana Rogue Legendary that is a 5/3, so aggressively statted for 4 mana, but mm-hmm. it's got a Death Rattle that says go dormant. Now, this is not ever something we've dealt with before,
no.
But dormant takes the... It takes up a spot on your board, so whenever it dies, it curls up into itself. And it reads, play 4 cards in a turn to revive this minion. So basically, if this thing dies, the next time you're able to play 4 cards all in one turn, it's going to come back. Now, this has... It's just crazy, because this mechanic is just so unique. Granted, this is gonna... I can't think that you would pull out any cards in Miracle Rogue to make this happen, which is, you know, the deck that's
right.
you're most used to playing a lot of cards in a turn. And in a Control Rogue, almost guaranteed you're not gonna be able to play 4 cards to revive it. But it doesn't... Like, I'm still really excited about this, because it's gonna push you as a Rogue player. Like, if you've got this... You've got this on board, and you've got it, and it's dead... there's a chance that you're going to be able to copy these Death Rattles. Like with Raptor, the Unearthed Raptor.
Yeah.
You could, you know, get 3 or 4 of these dead on board, play 4 cards, and revive all of them.
I wonder what happens with that Unearthed Raptor if it just morphs into the token after it dies.
You know, I don't know, but they would have had to figure it out, right? Because there's no way people aren't going to try it, right? Because it is a Death Rattle.
Unearthed Raptor is rotating into Wild, but obviously...
Sorry, I forgot. I only play Wild.
No, you're good, but Wild is getting more exciting, and we've talked about this before, that I think now that you've got 2 full sets, or 2 full years of rotation that are going to be over there, you're going to be a lot more tempted to go and figure out some of these cards and stuff, so... While we won't see it in Standard, I think it's a very fair question to say, how exactly does this interaction happen? Because, like you said, people are definitely going to try it out.
Yeah, I mean, I am really excited to play this, because I'm curious if Go Dormant, like, plus, like, this Death Rattle plus Baron, not Baron Rivendare?
Yeah.
I'm curious if it'll summon another one, if, like... Sure. It's going to be really interesting to see the weird combinations, but in terms of functionality, I'm not sure this card is going to be, you know, super great. But, yeah, you know, for those of us that love Rogue and love Deathrattle, it's going to hold a special place in our heart.
And you might have a different perspective on this, but I know especially in Standard, Miracle Rogue, and now Aggro Rogue actually has kind of been a viable objective on there too. This card doesn't really fit into either of those, like you mentioned.
Yeah, not at all.
It's a very high-value card, because if you can manage to even get it alive one more time, you were able to have 2/5/3 minions for 4 mana. Assuming that the play 4 cards in a turn is a normal turn for you, and you're not just wasting cards or something like that. I do love the flavor of this card, though. I mean, it just feels very much like a flower that you'd find in the wild, that, you know, you poke at it and it just withdraws, but then, I don't know, it gets some sunshine and some water and perfect soil.
Right, and it pops right back up.
And it's right back, yeah. So, and even if you weren't able to see the video on this one, you definitely want to see the token. So it's a different, it's shares in seed, and it's just the little poking out eyes that are just very mysterious and creepy. But it has 4 leaves that will fill up as you play cards that turn. So yep. It's another visual, but it's also, again, just the flavor. I feel like they went overboard in really reinforcing and thinking through how can we make this really fun and feel like you're in the jungle and plant, you know, weed whacking through to make it happen.
Right. And we got to also remember that this is the Rogue Legendary, not the Rogue Quest Reward. Because
correct.
If you compare this versus like the Nether Portal, like we were talking about earlier, you're getting a 5/3 that you have to play 4 cards to revive that dies to one of the 3/2s that are being summoned by that. Like it's these quest rewards are going to be just so much more powerful. They're going to be on an entirely different level than the normal legendaries, which
absolutely.
Just sounds crazy. Like we've got, you know, Super Saiyan Legendary and regular Legendary. And
well, I think it'll be cool though, because it will open up 9 new archetypes basically. And who knows
absolutely.
If all 9 will be completely viable, but certainly everyone will be wanting to try them, wanting to get the quests. Gosh, I didn't even think about it. I got to save up some dust for all these quests, man.
Well, remember that if you've got the, you know, Sylvanas and Rag, you're going to be getting at least 1,600 for each of those. So
okay.
I thought I was going to be spending those on some of the other legendaries that I'm missing from the base set, but I have all but decided that there's no way I'm doing that.
Yeah, there's no way. Because they did say that they're releasing each of those quests, and then there's one legendary minion for each class also. So in effect, you're getting all... actually, I think the neutral legendary minions, they said there's only like 4 or 5 of them. So maybe it balances out that way. But it seems like a lot more legendary stuff. So, buh. One more question about Sharazin that I thought while you were talking. How does this interact with N'Zoth? Are you going to get as many Sharazins as you killed with those tokens still on the board?
You know, I can't imagine that you would get any of them. Because I feel like this is going to... I feel like if we're thinking about the coding of this, which I'm not a coder, but if we think about it and we think about what we know of the graveyard, quote unquote, like if it's still on board and if it keeps coming back from the place on board, I can't imagine that you'd get a bunch. But if you do, you play 4 cards and you get a bunch of 5/3s? Like, I mean that would be cool.
I don't think that you're going to reactivate this that many times, because playing 4 cards in a turn is a lot.
It really is.
You think about the 30 cards that you've got in your deck. I mean, if you revive this, you know, even 3 times, that's 12 cards. That's almost half your deck right there that happens. So
yeah, that's. I mean, you've got 40% right there.
Yeah. And that's where I wonder if this is really going to have a place or not. But we've obviously got to see a lot more of these cards to figure out how they interact with each other and stuff.
Right, I did have one thought whenever I first saw this. I was like, ooh, I wonder if the reward for the quest for Rogue is going to be a minion that every time you cast a spell puts a copy of it into your deck. Which I know, sorry, this is totally like theory crafting slash just trying to come up with my own thing, but like I could easily see them that like with something like this, and with the way the Rogue has been, is like them making a minion that whenever you cast a spell, you just get a copy of that spell into your own deck.
It's almost like a Jade Idol sort of, but
yeah, I guess
both.
A little bit. I guess, I guess we'll find out, right? We'll see what
absolutely.
Happens.
Absolutely, sky's the limit. But those are only 2 of the cards. They actually revealed, I think, 11 of them, something like that.
Yeah, there were 11 revealed. They also revealed the Hunter Legendary, so if you want to see that, go check it out.
Big old dinosaurs and stuff. So, yeah, go check them out, and then definitely get excited. We'll have all of these in one big old chunker of an episode right after the whole set is released. But you didn't come on here necessarily to talk about new cards, did you, Ben?
No, I mean, as much fun as that is, I came on here for a little bit more nefarious purposes.
You came here to draw blood with your deck.
I did, absolutely.
It's time for another deck battle episode, and super excited about these because these shows are a whole lot of fun. We do these deck battle episodes about once a month, and if you've never listened to it before, what happens is the guest host is going to bring on their favorite deck onto the show, and they'll break it down for you. We'll talk through what cards are in it, how it works, why they like playing it, and then they're going to go in a best of three battle against me live here on the show. But the twist is that I'm always going to use the current reigning champion deck of the show, which is the last deck that a guest host brought onto the show and won with. And the big challenge is if a deck can make it through three challengers in a row, they'll be inducted into the Happy Hearthstone Hall of Fame, which currently only has three decks in it. It's got Dan Patrice's Beastmaster Hunter deck, my very own Warlock Demon Zoo deck, and Craig's Dragon Priest deck. And right now, the defending champion deck is Zerotio's Weird Reno Mage, which if you weren't able to listen to, is on episode 86 over at MMOReporter.com. And he has one out of the three wins to get in the Hall of Fame, so he's wanting to, you know, buck up, and I'm wanting to show him up well. But Ben, I want to hear what you have brought to the table in order to take down Reno and all of his weirdness.
Oh, absolutely. But really fast, before we jump into this, I just wanted to mention to you, I was talking to one of my co-hosts on Hearthaholics, and I mentioned that I was coming on to the show, and one of my co-hosts was like, oh, well, with Josh, and I was like, oh, well, actually, Andrew took it on. And he's like, wait, is that the one that brought on the crazy warlock deck? And I was like, yeah, that's him. He's like, man, that was awesome. So anyway, you are very renowned for that.
Well, good, anyway, I'm thankful.
Let's talk about this deck. So this deck is my favorite deck to mess around with is Druid, or my favorite class, excuse me.
Okay.
My dream deck is a controlled rogue, that is not a thing. So we're going to keep messing around with Druid. I started out with a question after seeing the Naga Sea Witch, which is a 5 mana 5/5. I think it's the most underrated card in Hearthstone, and what it does is it has a very unique effect of making all of your cards cost 5. And I started out with this, to make this deck, I started out with the question. And the question was, if you could play any two cards in Hearthstone on the same turn, which cards would you choose? And my answer to that was to just go absolutely nuts with legendaries. I would play two legendaries every single turn.
Sure, sure.
So that's the theme of this deck. The theme of this deck is ramping, like just absolutely sprinting to 10 mana. I've got every ramp card that exists in Druid. Okay. And your goal in this deck is to sprint to 10. Once you get to 10, there's a bunch of 10 mana combos and, you know, 20 mana combos if you've got Kuhn and Aviana. That allow you to just do insane, insane combos. So yeah, that's kind of the theme.
Okay, very cool. So if that's the theme, tell us about like how it wins. What does it take in order for this to not just be a fun deck, but one that's actually going to take home the W?
Right. Okay, so this deck, as I said, because it's trying to ramp, it spends most like turns 1 through 4 not doing a whole lot, just, you know, getting mana. I've got a couple small minions, but really, this deck just gets the crap beat out of it by aggro. This deck is not good against aggro. This is meant to try to beat these control decks. So it wins by cheating out just insane amounts of value by being able to play cards that I don't think Hearthstone designers ever intended to be played together. And so, like, the best win condition comes from Archthief Rafam. And you, with him, you're gonna discover, and you almost never discover the 10-mana spell that puts a bunch of 3/3s on the board. You almost always choose either plus 10, plus 10, or the deal 10 damage. Deal 10 damage only if you're about to win. You almost always choose the plus 10, plus 10. And the reason for that is it's a 10-mana card that says, give a minion plus 10, plus 10. And if you have one minion already on board, which you have to in order for this combo to work, you're going to be able to... It's essentially being able to deal 10 damage. And so that's kind of the win condition.
Okay.
the key cards to make this happen are Naga Sea Witch, which we've already talked about, mm-hmm. Aviana, which makes all of your minions cost one.
Yikes, yeah.
Kun, which is the druid legendary that either refreshes all of your mana or gives you 10 armor. And then Archthief for Fallen, like we mentioned. And then the other card that's really of note is Fight Promoter. This is the 6-mana 4-4 that reads, if you have a minion, like if you have a friendly minion that has at least 6 health, draw 2 cards.
Pretty good.
This deck got really hurt with the Ancient of Lore change.
Oh,
the Ancient
I
of
bet.
Lore
yeah.
changed because you needed that cycle. And so what I did is I was like, okay, well, I need a way to draw 2 cards. And Cold Light Oracle was not helping because I was giving my opponent cards.
You don't want to do that, typically.
No, not at all. And Acolyte of Pain was too slow. So I was like, okay, well, Fight Promoter draws 2 cards, but how can I trigger this? And I thought, oh, like, I've got the Druid of the Claws. Those are the 4/6s with taunts.
Okay, all right.
But you can't play those on the same turn. You can't play a Fight Promoter and a Druid of the Claw on the same turn. And if you leave a Druid of the Claw out on the board, it's going to take damage. And so I was like, well, there's really no good way to do this. And so what I did is I typed in, because, you know, we have the search ability to say health at this for this much mana.
Right, right.
And I typed in mana 4, health 6, and the thing that came up was the Hungry Dragon.
Oh, okay.
And so there's a bunch of 2-card combos, but the ones that are really important are Fight Promoter, or Hungry Dragon Fight Promoter, because you summon a 1-cost minion for your opponent, which... really, the only way that this goes bad is if you accidentally summon the Pit Stake, the 2/1 poisonous one.
Yeah.
But other than that, all the minions, all the other one drop minions are not effective enough that your huge threats that you're, because you're dropping threat after threat, none of the other one drops are really, you know, important enough or that really impact your ability to play.
Sure. That's really interesting. And Naga Sea Witch was in League of Explorers, right?
I don't remember. I know that she's definitely, this is a wild deck.
Oh, sure, sure. I started thinking once you said Aviana, I realized, well, wait, Naga Sea Witch says that all of your cards cost 5, and Aviana makes it so all your minions cost 1. So can you talk to us about there's got to be some order of placing those or something that really matters.
Oh, absolutely.
Is that right?
So basically so the best setup is having a Naga Sea Witch survive one turn.
Okay.
Because as soon as a Naga Sea Witch survives one turn, you have you've got room to move. Mm-hmm. Because now all of your cards cost 5. If you're able to basically at some point you want a Naga Sea Witch on board and an Aviana on board, and then you want to drop Kun. Because once you've done that, you've now got your spells cost 5, your minions cost 1, and you've got 10 mana to play with.
Gotcha.
So what this allows is, the craziest combo I've had in this deck is where you play Archthief for Fom,
mm-hmm.
you give any of your minions +10/+10, and then you play a Faceless Shambler on top of that.
Have
so you end
mercy.
Up with like, you play end up with like a 17/17 on board.
Oh.
Or, I'm sorry, 2 17/17s on board, and one of them has taunt. And
I'm having second thoughts all of a sudden about this.
Well, the thing is that this deck is not it's not consistent. That's
sure,
the thing.
Sure.
And it loses to aggro really hard. But once you're able to get a ton of minions out on board, and like, because this also has Cenarius,
mm-hmm.
If you get any of these cards out on board and then play Cenarius, you give them all 2/2. Like, the board presence of this thing is insane.
Sure. Would you call this a combo deck inherently? Because it really sounds like there's a lot of play off of a couple cards here and there, and those tend to be the decks that aren't as consistent, but when they do work, they really work well.
You know, I can't imagine how it would be a combo deck, or how it wouldn't be a combo deck.
Sure.
It's not like the curve of this thing almost is non-existent. Like, it's so heavily laden with 8+ cards. Like, I don't have any cards in the 7-mana slot, and I only have the two Fight Promoters in the 6. Everything else is 8 and above.
Wow. It reminds me of 2 different decks. It reminds me of the Astral Communion Druid, and it reminds me of the Kun Aviana combo deck.
Yeah. It's that, but Archthief for Fom, because I love
right.
the idea of discovering a 10-mana spell, and believe me, if I could play this deck with Kazakus, I would.
Sure.
But Arch Thief for Fom allows you to discover that 10-mana spell, and I always wanted to make a deck that would work with that. And honestly, if I were going to change this deck at all, I would get rid of Rafam, I would get rid of all of the ramp, and I would just put in mid-range cards. And this deck could probably be really consistent, but the fun combo is what makes this deck worth playing.
Absolutely. Man, well, it sounds like something, especially if you're getting a little bit tired of seeing things on the ladder here and there, to just really throw off your opponent and maybe even steamroll them with something. I mean, have you played this on ladder much?
Yeah. Yes. It kills any. So the thing is, I can't climb with this deck because it loses to aggro.
Right.
But it's got like a 70-80% win rate against control decks.
Jeez.
Like any Jade, this deck wrecks Jade decks because it ramps so fast. Like even if they start playing minions, like their Jade minions on turn one, mm-hmm. you get to 10 mana, and as soon as you hit 10 mana, you're drawing through your deck with your nourishes and your fight promoters, and then all of a sudden you've got like 17-17s on board. Like that's not an abnormal thing.
Man, it's really interesting to hear, and especially right now when there's a lot more control-y decks on the ladder. I mean, I'm still running into plenty of Pirate Warrior, but there's also quite a bit of Reno Lock, Jade Druid, that kind of Jade Shaman is pretty big right now, it seems. So this might be one to take out there and try out.
Yeah, I mean it's definitely fun. Remember that this is a wild deck. You need a lot of wild cards, and especially after the rotation when I believe Aviana is moving to wild,
she
is. Right?
Yeah, she was TBT, I think.
Yeah, so you're not gonna be able to do any of the cool combinations with her, which she's pretty key.
Yeah. Well, cool. Well, any closing thoughts about the deck?
It's the most fun deck that I've ever built, and I love it to death. It's my baby, and I've been working on this idea and reiterating and changing cards in this for months now, and this is the final iteration that I've settled on, and I'm very proud of.
Very cool. You should be proud. I mean, especially with making a deck, we talked about that with Anthony a couple episodes ago. I mean, there's no greater feeling than creating something that's completely your own, and even finding just some level of success. The biggest level of success is really enjoying playing with it, and it sounds like you've got that in spades right now with it.
Oh yeah, this deck is tons of fun.
Well, very cool. Well, as we enter in, I'll just remind you guys real quick again, Zerosia's Reno Mage is what I'm going to be playing, and you can check that out on the past episode in episode 86 if you want the full rundown of that. But are you ready for this battle?
Absolutely, bring it on.
Okay, well, let's see what we get. It's going to be a best of three series. If you're watching on YouTube right now, you'll see the battle right now. If you listen to the podcast, you'll have to go check it out on there if you'd like to see from my perspective just exactly how things go. So we'll be right back after this. All right, we are back. The dust has settled. The challenge is over. And I said it on the stream for our YouTube watchers, but that was a classic why combo decks beat control decks lesson. So, well done, Ben. Congratulations. How are you feeling right now?
You know, I'm really excited. As I was going, I was actually saying this while I was streaming it. I was really nervous. Like, I really wanted to win more than anything.
Sure, sure.
And I, like, it really, what I realized is as we were playing, what it came down to was your Kazakus potions.
Mm-hmm.
And really, your ability to transform my minions would be the only way that you could win.
Absolutely.
Because even with double Ice Block and Reno, I still was able to do enough damage to push through that.
And I was actually saying it during... So we played only two matches, and you won both without question.
Yeah.
And during that second match, near the end, you were able to pull off a combo where I think you had a Hungry Dragon and a Fight Promoter on board, which, by the way, that is a genius combo. I mean,
isn't it? It's so great.
Getting 5-6 or 5-6 and 4-4 and drawing two cards for 10... It's just bananas.
It's a really good combo.
And I think I'm always, because I played that card in Arena every now and then, but I'm always scared of what I'm going to give my opponent. But I mean, during this game, you gave me nothing. You gave me a Goldshire Footman. He's the bane of every Hearthstone joke. So
right, right.
But
I mean, honestly, like I mentioned before we played, the only time that goes bad is if you draw a poisonous minion, the one poisonous minion.
Sure.
And even then, like, you've got so much stats and so many minions on board that it really doesn't matter.
So you had those minions on board, but then the next turn you play Aviana, you play Coon, and I gulped all the way down to my intestine, and then played an Annoyatron. I'm trying to remember this, another Hungry Dragon. And then Cenarius, which buffed everything +2/+2. And I'm staring at an impossible feat, which I realized, okay, I think I had an Ice Block up and I had one more in hand and Reno in hand. But I realized even with all of that, I have to get Kazakus and I have to get a 10-mana potion that will transform everything. If I get that I have
the
a chance.
That was the only way you could win. And honestly, when you played Ink Master Celia into Blizzard, mm-hmm. I was like, that was a mistake. That was absolutely a mistake you're going to need that for that 10-mana potion. And as soon as you, that turn that I played Aviana and mm-hmm. Coon, mm-hmm. the only reason I did that was because I realized that the only wave clear you had left after you had played your Blizzard, because, you know, it is a Reno mage.
Right.
The only wave clear you had left was a Flame Strike.
And
if you give everything on your board that already has like 6 and 8 health, 2 more health,
mm-hmm.
I was like, there's no way he can win this. And so whenever you're facing down, you know, well over 30 attack on board,
mm-hmm.
I saw you play the Cabalist Tome.
Right.
And I was like, oh, he's digging. This absolutely. Game is in the bag.
I was saying, if I get another Ice Block, that'll give me one more shot at trying Kazakus. But,
right.
And we need to talk about another kind of unsung hero of this deck, because the reason I played Ink Master and Blizzard was because I was trying to find a way to contest your Sogoth the Slitherer.
Yeah, which I got out on turn 6.
I mean, my goodness.
So what I did is I was looking at your board and I said, okay, you had a 4/1 Azure Drake.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, well, I could, you know, attack that, but really he's got a bunch of single target removal, and there's like the only things that he could play, like he's already played the Volcanic Potion. The only thing he could do is, like, if he wants to clear the Sogoth, he's gonna have to Flame Strike a single Sogoth
and then kill his Azure.
Yeah, and I was looking at it as, like, this is obviously the only play. Like, this is a really good play right now.
Mm-hmm.
And it did. Like, you were sitting there, like, and you roped, I think, every turn, right, like, in that area, because you were thinking,
oh, yeah,
how can I kill this?
And I hoped you weren't reading that as BM, because I seriously, I said it so many times that I was struggling to know how to play against it, because this Reno deck is so good at single target removal and all that, but when you've got 20 threats on board, I don't know how to deal with that. Or when you've got a Sogoth that negates my ability to do that, I'm kind of hosed. So there was a lot of stuff that felt like almost directly countering this deck.
Yeah, as near the end, I was like, man, he's going to feel like I teched this deck specifically for him. But no, I teched this deck for any Reno deck.
Right, and it did really well. I mean, the only thing that I will leave to the RNG gods is that I never drew Molten Giant or Arcane Giant. Which, if you remember Zerosho's episode, those are the two kind of win conditions for this deck, is to get down to 1 health, be able to drop those minions, and then heal all the way back up. And I never drew either of them. But the problem was that in the instance that we were in when you were popping my Ice Block, 2 8/8s would have been completely irrelevant at that point.
Right.
Because you wouldn't have even needed to trade into them. You could have just kept going, and I couldn't do more than 16 damage, you know?
Right. That's why I like this deck so much, is because I was nervous, because I was like, he has to, I don't know, the first game, let me ask you this, did you know that your only chance was to take a 10 mana spell? Because you never ended up, you did end up playing a spell, it was a deal mm-hmm. 8 damage and summon an 8/8, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Did you have the option to transform? Like, did you know that that was an option?
I don't think that I had that option. I knew that I was looking for it. For some reason, I missed the Cenarius combo of being able to buff everything, because that's just bananas, right?
Right.
So I was thinking a board clear would probably be helpful, because if you get a bunch of stuff on there, so that's why I went with the 6 damage for everything. But
right.
But that wasn't even enough at that point. When you have 7/7, 7/8, 9-9 on, I mean, my goodness, that's just...
And the during the first game, you had used a polymorph,
mm-hmm.
and I cheered both times that you played polymorph on my Ragnaros, which is, you know, a perfectly normal, like, that's
you
a perfectly
kind of
good target,
to, right? It's
like, it's a great target, yeah, to polymorph. But I was like, okay, well, he's used this one polymorph. I know, uh-huh, he doesn't have another. All he has is one, like, single target.
Right.
And so,
right,
I was able to play Sea Naga and make it a 15-15.
Yeah.
You did some damage to it, and then the next turn I played the, what's it called? The one, the Faceless...
Faceless Shambler, yeah.
Faceless Shambler, and I made a 15-8 with Taunt, and I was still able to keep this Naga Sea Witch on board.
Pretty good, by the way, apparently.
Yeah, I really like this deck. Again, it gets crapped on by aggro decks.
Right, right.
But when it comes to these control decks, like, it's all about the Kazaka's Potion, and you could have easily gotten lucky and had those.
Sure,
but, like,
sure.
Like I said, I...
It just didn't happen this time.
I was telling my stream, I was like, if he doesn't play Kazaka's this turn, he's dead. Like, if, yep, he doesn't, because, yep, I'm going to be able to push enough damage over the next couple turns that...
And it seemed... It seems like you had a lot of the ramp cards that you were wanting, too. I know you said that you just stuffed every single one of them, but it seemed like it's pretty consistent that you're able to have the things that you need to get to 10 mana pretty quickly.
Yeah, if you're not facing down Hunter Hero Powers or, you know, big 1-drops or big 2-drops, like, it is very consistent to get to 10 mana, and once it gets there, it draws cards, it does the fight promoter, it does the Cenarius. Like, honestly, a lot of games I'll play Cenarius for taunt, and I'll play Kuhn for, instead of refreshing mana, I'll, mm-hmm, play him for armor. But really, when it comes to control decks, it's like, okay, how are we gonna, what's our best way to win,
wow,
this?
Yeah. Well done, man. I feel like this matchup was a perfect exposition, really, of what that deck can do. So,
yeah,
I mean, that's really what you hope for, bringing on a deck like that. You hate when it draws incorrectly and it just never quite picks up speed. But, man, that was very, very well done. So bravo,
yeah,
to you.
And well played on your part. I think it's funny that it comes down to one card. Can you, uh-huh, Kazaka's into... polymorph an entire board.
Absolutely. Well, good job. Any final thoughts about this deck? Or I'm sure there are people who are going to want to be playing this against all the Renos that they're seeing on the ladder. So,
well, I mean, like I said, this deck could be really good if you took out all of the ramp cards and just put in good, like, good cards that, and just let yourself get to 10 mana normally.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're able to, if you do that and take out that, the crazy Archmage combo, like, this deck could be really good, I think, against everything, but it's way more fun to make 15-15.
Sure, absolutely. Well, good deal.
Yeah, and so thank you so much for playing. I have a random question for you I've always been curious about on,
sure,
the show. You're going to be playing this deck against other people, right?
I will. Now you have gotten your first win in the set of three, so...
Right, and so how many of these cards are you going to have to craft? Because there are a lot of legendaries in this deck.
There are, and I tell you what, I have a lot of cards, you know, overall, but Aviana is one of the ones that has always eluded me, and I was even tempted by all the Kuhn C'Thun combo decks out there to try her out, but she's just rotating, so I said, yeah, it's not that big of a deal, I'll miss her. And then you went and did this, so...
Sorry, man.
No, that's okay. And Kuhn I don't have either, so I think I'll have to drop on them.
Man.
I'm sure that there are listeners who don't have all of these who want to try it out. Are there any kind of substitutions that you'd recommend for all the crazy legendaries if they don't have all of them?
I mean, here's the deal. You can, like, I have teched this deck, like I said before, like, I've taken out Archmage, and the deck gets better. I've played this deck with Blood of the
or
Ancient
Archthief,
Ones.
Is that who you're talking about?
Archthief, thank,
okay,
you.
Yeah.
Archmage, my bad. But I've played this deck with Blood of the Ancient Ones. You can play this deck with Aviana, Sea Naga, and Kuhn. And, like, as long as you've got those three, you can basically move, like, play any deck you want. My goal was just to put as many heavy cards in this as I can.
Sure.
But I've done, like, Blood of the Ancient Ones. I've literally just done C'Thun decks. Like,
mm-hmm,
you can do this combo with basically anything.
Wow. Well, cool. We'll see if I'll drop it on both of them. But I know I definitely need one of those two for sure. So it'll be very good. Well, cool, man. Well, we'll go ahead and move into our community section, and I'm really excited that we get to continue on a tradition that's been on the show called the Dust Bowl. So one of our awesome listeners, Jake, has donated to the show for a while, and we've had this section every month where we're going to tear through some new packs and pick through and talk through some of the cards that we would suggest keeping or dusting. So before the show, Ben and I went through and opened the packs that Jake graciously donated, and we're going to talk about some Mean Streets. And I think, if I'm not mistaken, that this is actually the first Dust Bowl we've done in the Mean Streets set, because that was kind of the time when we were transitioning with Josh and all that. So I'm really excited to kind of talk about some of these cards, maybe for the first time in a while. So Ben, yeah. Out of the packs that we saw, what's your card to keep that you really liked?
So we only had one epic and no legendary, so we were kind of stuck to the rares and commons.
It's true.
Yeah, and so, but the coin that we, or the coin.
Well, it is.
I gave it away. I gave it away. The card that I wanted to keep is the counterfeit coin. Because I, as I said before, I do play a lot of Rogue, and in Miracle Rogue and Mally Rogue, this counterfeit coin, everyone said was going to be really bad, but whenever you think about the combo and the just all the new things that Rogue are wanting to do, even with the new legendary, having an extra mana and having the ability to play a card as a combo piece is really important, and this counterfeit coin gets used in a lot of decks.
Yeah, it's weird because it's half of an innervate, so it's like not as strong, but I think there's no class that really wants it more than Rogue, because you get the benefit of both of them. I mean, even if you don't have any combo cards, just to have that little extra push to play something, it's a really big deal. Activator for Edwin Van Cleef, I mean, it's so versatile.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, like Rogue, if Rogue could put in a card that didn't give them a mana, that was just a zero mana like combo, like it could be like, something
do
like,
nothing,
like do nothing, like they would use it, because with all the different things, whether you're using it for questings or gadgets and auctioneer, like it's good to be able and this combo combo starters, like it's a really like Rogues need that, and so counterfeit coin is the card that I chose to keep.
That's great. And I had to get a little greedy with the one epic that we opened, because it's actually an epic that I didn't have yet, and I was kind of excited about it. I just didn't want to really drop the dust on it. So my card to keep is Rat Pack, which is the 3-mana 2/2 hunter minion that reads Death Rattle. Summon one. I can't remember the exact wording, but you summon as many 1/1s as your attack is. So if you buff Rat Pack before it dies, you'll get that many 1/1s. And I've been really excited about this card because I feel like there's some really strong one-turn kill hunter that could be possible, comboing Rat Pack, Tundra Rhino, and Scavenging Hyena. Because if you play this, the Tundra Rhino, you're able to get all your beasts with charge, and Rat Pack is a beast, so you get the Scavenging Hyena on board, put a Rat Pack down, attack it into whatever your opponent has, attack the 1/1 tokens that you get into everything, and for each kill, that Scavenging Hyena is getting, I think it's +2/+1?
+2/+1. It's very aggressive.
So, I mean, if you got 4 procs off of that, then that's a 10 attack minion.
Man, if only we still had Warsong Commander, right?
For Hunter or something.
Yeah, that would be great.
But I feel like there's something to that, and I might even go ahead and craft the second one just because I mean, obviously Hunter is not doing great right now, but I think that there's something to that that could make it just some squirrely, fun OTK deck. So
yeah, and if the meta slows down, kind of like they're printing all these cards for,
sure,
the hand buff Hunter, which never saw any kind of play, that could be a thing. That could be a real thing, and so Rat Pack could be a card that you'd want to play.
Who knows? Does it fit in any other decks that you know of?
Hand buff, it might fit into Beast Hunter, but I can't imagine that it does.
Yeah,
but that's as close as it would get.
It's pretty valuable, but yeah, we'll see.
Maybe a board flood hunter? No, maybe, probably not.
Yeah, because there's not really anything that takes advantage of it other than Scavenging Hyena, but
right.
As far as Cards to Dust, again, we didn't really have a huge selection there, but we're going to talk about one of the buff cards for Hunter, which is Hidden Cache. It's a 2-mana secret, and it's a rare, and it reads, after your opponent plays a minion, give a random minion in your hand +2/+2. And this card, hand buff Hunter really isn't working right now, obviously, but this card just doesn't even, I feel like, fit in that. I mean, it buffs something in your hand, but the fact that your opponent has to do something to activate it, you may not have any minions in your hand when it's activated.
Right, and this isn't going to be... It's not going to be great because you're paying 2 mana for +2/+2. That's you're not cheating out any mana. It's not... Like, if you compare that to getting the 3/3 bear, like Bear Trap, like...
Yeah.
It's not... It doesn't even compare.
Yeah, that's a really good point. If it gave everything in your hand +2/+2...
Or even +1/+1, it wouldn't be bad.
Yeah, it wouldn't be quite as good, but I think it would be playable in that case instead of this. And what about your Card to Dust, Ben?
So my Card to Dust was the Streetwise Investigator. I understand that this could be a great tech choice for if we ever have sideboards, but this 5-mana is a 4/6, correct?
Yes, I'm looking it up right now.
Yes, and so I believe it's a 5-mana 4/6 that battle cry, all enemy minions lose stealth.
Right.
Now, this card, it just isn't super great. It's really situational. You can go like 4 or 5 games in a row without ever seeing any stealth minions.
Mm-hmm.
And a 4-mana 5/4, or a 5-mana 4/6, I don't know what I'm saying. Numbers are hard.
Yeah, they are.
It isn't great. And so, like, even with a, like, let's take a situation where, like, you put this in a deck, you're gonna play it, you take 5 mana to make all of your enemy minions have not stealth, so you could target them, and then at best case you have 5 mana left to spend, but more likely than not you've got way less than that.
Mm-hmm.
And if they were gonna attack anyway next turn, you probably aren't gonna be able to do much with that.
Right. I think that this was trying to solve a problem of Rogue, which obviously they've got all the, you know, conceal, which is cycling,
right,
and all that kind of stuff. But the big problem is exactly what you just said. And the thing that's actually working to tech against that is Devolve. If you throw that into your Shaman deck, then any buffs or anything that's on those stealth Rogue minions are all gone. And a lot of times... Go ahead.
Oh, sorry, go ahead. I was just going to say, but if you had put Devolve as an effect on... an understated minion and made it cost way more, it might not be quite as effective.
Sure. And the thing I like about Devolve is that it's usable no matter what your opponent's board is. This necessitates that those minions have a specific effect, which your opponent's deck may not be even able to create. So I agree that even though this is a common, you're not going to get much dust from it, it's so unusable that... I don't even know if you pick this in Arena, you know. I'm even struggling I'm struggling to think of anything that you could justify it. If we had sideboarding in Hearthstone where for tournaments you could kind of put some tech cards that you could cycle in or out of your deck, this might be something that you keep on the side potentially, but even then it doesn't really solve the problem. So.
It would work with Fight Promoter.
It would work with Fight Promoter. There's the... Well, yeah, but Fight Promoter's 6 mana, isn't it?
Right, you'd have to... Yeah, again, has the same problem as the Druid of the Claw. But anyway.
We're trying so hard, Investigator. Like, help us. Give us something. No. But thanks again to Jake for your donation for that. And hopefully, you know, talking through these cards is helpful and it's definitely fun. So, no questions or iTunes reviews. I did want to shout out to Anthony. He actually sent me a Murloc aggro shaman list that he was working on. Which is pretty cool. It actually uses Call in the Finishers, and Every Fin is Awesome, and Finja, and that whole package. So it's a pretty cool deck. But thanks for sending that in. If you have any questions or thoughts that you'd like to send into the show, you can always send them in at thehappyhearthstone@gmail.com. Would love to talk about those for you. Also, no iTunes reviews this week, so be sure if you have not gone on there and just talked about what you like about the show, it'll let other people find us, and they can listen, and they can have an awesome time just like you're having right now. All right. We've got... I feel like we've talked about a lot of cards today, Ben, but we have more that we cannot miss, and it is our card of the week. So would you do us the honors of bringing us in?
Of course. Now, I'm going to give you a little warning. I wrote a little riff on my harmonica. So give me just a second to get this up, and I'll serenade you guys.
Okay, I love it.
It's the card of the week, and it's so sleek. New legendary. When things get hairy, she'll be your guide, and she'll keep you alive. It's the card of the week, Elise Starseep. They changed her name. Ooh, what a shame. Now we gotta go to Ungaro. There we go.
That was awesome. I know we've had guitars, we've had full productions. I don't know that we've had harmonica before. Felt like I was around the campfire getting ready to explore or something like that.
Well, thanks for that. I started trying to write the song about an hour ago, like right after the stream, so that I could perform it here.
Well, it was awesome. So tell us all about Elise and what she's doing in this new set.
So as we all know, Elise is originally showed up in... she showed up in the League of Explorers. Mm-hmm. And so Elise is a neutral legendary. She's a 5-mana 5/5, and she's got a new name. She's Elise the Trailblazer, which is, you know, why it's not Starseeker. They changed her name. And what she does is she's got a battle cry that says, shuffle a sealed Ungaro pack into your deck, which is kind of cool because they've saved the same mechanic from the last one, where it shuffles something into your deck that once you get it, something happens. But when you get it, it's a 2-mana card that it's so cool. When you play it, it opens right in front of you. It opens an Ungaro pack. Mm-hmm. And this Ungaro pack has 5 random cards in it, just like any other pack would, and they all go into your hand. Now, the interesting thing about this is that when they were testing this, they found that the Ungaro packs were pretty, they were pretty lackluster. And so what they did is they heavily, heavily weighted this for legendaries and epics. So they said that on average, you're going to get 1 legendary per pack and that you're guaranteed at least 1 epic. So this card is just, it's crazy. It's a very interesting, probably more meme-y than anything, but very neat.
Well, now, I think that there's actually a place for this card because it has the same flavor that Elise Starseeker did before, where you're adding value for the late game, basically, right? So effectively, what she does after you open the pack is lets you draw 5 cards that are outside of your deck. So it makes your deck a 35-card deck, sort of like Prince Malcazar does.
Yeah, exactly.
But these are going to be cards from a very specific set. So if your deck is themed around Ungaro, there's a really good chance that you could have something that's actually, you know, playable and helpful for what your deck's doing. Interesting thing is that you could get cards from other classes.
I'm so excited about this.
And honestly, as I said, that was when I realized it. So now I'm processing it and my mind's exploding.
You can get quests from other classes.
You could.
Classes.
Yeah, you totally
this is,
could.
This is totally outside the non-generated. Like, this is something that you could do. In addition to that, this is going to allow, like, some classes to get, like Warrior has probably never had, like, a druid spell, and that's possible now.
It's not controllable, but it's possible. And honestly, getting the quest sounds fun, but the truth is that you probably don't want that, because if you got the Warlock quest, Warrior, then it's unplayable. But like in the stream, what we saw was that they got the Hunter legendary minion and the Rogue legendary minion, which is possible. And if you get both of those, that's just hyper, hyper value.
Right.
And just to be clear,
go ahead.
Just to be clear, you don't get to keep the cards that you draw from that pack. So it's just for the game right now. But the fact that you're able to just add these cards to your deck, even though they're random, you're probably going to get at least one or two cards that are going to help you in whatever you're trying to do.
Yeah, for sure. And the one thing to be careful of this is, because it is going to add five cards, like, that's more than, I think, any other draw effect that has a number on it in the game.
Yeah.
So you're going to need to make sure that you don't, that you have a space for five cards in your
hand. But if you are running out of cards in your hand, this is a great way to really quickly get back in the game.
Yeah, absolutely. And the cool thing is that since this is a battle cry, granted, Bran is rotating out, but, like, you're still going to be... Bran is rotating,
right? He is,
right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, no. But anyway, you'll still be able to... If you wanted to, you could Youthful Brewmaster this because it's a battle cry, and you can do this multiple times.
Get a bunch of packs in your deck.
Sorry, I'm not going to... You won't... On Arthaholics and hear from me, you're probably not going to hear much, you know, meta talk. You're going to hear the crazy talk.
No, and that's totally fine. I think that, especially right now, I mean, like you said before, we have no clue what the meta is going to be like after this. So really, everything's just speculation right now. At the end of the day, you want to have fun while you're playing this game. And I think that this is a perfect example of a card where they're doing something very unique and different that they haven't done in the game yet. But, I mean, you could see Day 9's eyes get as big as his head as it was being played, you know, and because it gives you that feeling when you're opening a pack in the game. And that's just pretty fun. I love that they're thinking through that.
And for the people that like playing with golden cards but still want to save their dust, like, creating Elise, like a golden Elise, is going to be the biggest bang for your buck if you're wanting to play with a lot of golden cards. I don't know if that's important to a lot of people, but I know it is to some.
Sure, and he did mention, actually, that there's a chance you could get golden cards from the pack, even if she's not golden.
Really? So, yeah. That's cool that they worked that in there.
Yeah, it seems like the rarity is just way higher on pretty much everything, so I'm sure there will be a Trolden clip of someone getting five golden legendaries off of an Angora pack.
Of course.
And, you know, because that just has to happen at some point.
Do you mind if I put my tinfoil hat on for just a second?
Sure.
I bet I doubt they would do this, but there is a chance that they put this in to reset the pity timer. So that, like, because, I don't know, maybe it's connected to your account or something, so, like, the pity timer to legendaries.
I don't know about that. Especially since they said that the rarity works different, it's gotta be.
Yeah. Sorry, I just, you know, tinfoil hat off now.
Yeah. I do think for people who aren't buying as many packs or something like that, though, this is a great way to kind of give them just the fun of opening one, even if it's just for one game. This is just a very fun card that's going to allow you to play with cards you may not already have. So for the budget player or anyone like that, I think Elise is going to be high on your crafting list if you don't get her out of, you know, what you do get.
Absolutely.
Well, cool. Well, we're coming to the end of our show here. We want to remind you guys that the Happy Hearthstone is a proud part of the MMO Reporter Network, which is a collaboration of several different podcasts that are all on mission to have a bunch of fun while we're playing the games that we love. So if you play any MMOs like WoW, LOTRO, Guild Wars, or anything like that, be sure to check out the other shows at mmoreporter.com. There's some great stuff there. Also, if you'd like to support the Happy Hearthstone or any of the shows on there, you can support us through MMO Reporter. They have a Patreon set up, and we've got a link in the show notes and everything like that. And then specifically for here, I would love to hear if you guys are loving the show, if you're hating the show. I hope if you're listening this long, you're not hating it. But if there are things you think we can do better, we always get better in all aspects of life through open and honest feedback. So I would love to hear what you guys have. You can email the show to let me know at thehappyhearthstone@gmail.com. You can check out our Google Plus community, which is just crazy amounts of people who are always talking about stuff. I'll put the link in the show notes. You can also follow me on Twitter at @AndrewIsLiving or follow the show at @TheHappyHS. Also, you can comment on the blog at mmoreporter.com. And that's pretty much us in the show. What about you, Ben? For those who want to see all your wild antics and follow you, how can they do that?
Well, absolutely. If you're interested in some of the crazier stuff of Hearthstone, or if you're interested in following the wild stuff, you can come join us at Hearthaholics. We're on the Wales Are Wales network. That's wales.com/Hearthaholics. And if you're a podcast fan, we actually run five weekly shows right now, and we're actually about to add a sixth.
Nice.
Covering all sorts of different topics. So if you like video game music or anime or just culture in general, go there and check that out. But in terms of finding me and my crazy stuff, You can find me on YouTube, Twitch, both / Ben Bezler. You can find me and some other things at whalesarewhales.com. You can also follow me on Twitter at twitter.com/ Ben Bezler.
That's awesome. We're always going to be, I'm always going to be looking to you guys to tell me what to do at the Tavern Brawl, because you guys just, you know, you know what it is. So, man,
for sure.
So appreciate you coming on, Ben. It was a blast having you on here. And I just want to throw it out for all of our listeners, too, that we are always actively looking for more co-hosts for this show. This has been and will always be the greatest Hearthstone community-driven podcast. So if you've thought about being on the show or you're interested at all, be sure to shoot me an email like Ben did, and I would love to talk about what craziness we can do for an episode. So thanks so much for coming on, man. Had a blast with
you. This was a great time. I can't wait to hear how you pilot this deck in the future.
I'm definitely a little bit nervous. I may need to get some tips before I jump in next time, but I will definitely do my best. And thanks again so much to you for visiting the Happy Hearthstone and having a little fun with us. We'll see you next time.
Bye, guys.